Welcome to A Real Affliction, BPD Culture and Stigma, a podcast devoted to exploring how we experience, treat, write about, advocate for, and conceptualize borderline personality disorder. My name is Cynthia Gralla. I'm a writer and teacher with a history of BPD. In this, the podcast's first interview, and in honor of BPD Awareness Month, I'm thrilled to share a talk with Bailey McKnight, co-founder of the BPD Society of British Columbia. But first, because this is only the second episode of the podcast, I want to go over the diagnostic criteria for BPD. It first appeared in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or DSM, in 1980. The fifth and latest edition of the DSM lists 9 criteria for BPD, requiring a patient to match 5 to qualify for the diagnosis. 1. Frantic efforts to avoid real or imagined abandonment. 2. A pattern of unstable and intense interpersonal relationships characterized by alternating between extremes of idealization and devaluation. 3. Markedly and persistently unstable self-image or sense of self, also known as identity disturbance. 4. Impulsivity in at least 2 areas that are potentially self-damaging, such as spending, sex, substance abuse, reckless driving, binge eating, but not including self-harm or suicide attempts. 5. Recurrent suicidal behavior, gestures, or threats, or self-mutilating behavior. 6. Affective instability due to a marked reactivity of mood, for example, intense episodic dysphoria, irritability, or anxiety, usually lasting a few hours and only rarely more than a few days. 7. Chronic feelings of emptiness. 8. Inappropriate, intense anger or difficulty controlling anger. And 9. Transient, stress-related paranoid ideation or severe dissociative symptoms. Not everyone with BPD experiences all of these symptoms, and they can vary widely in the degree to which they manifest. But BPD is a serious disorder. As I explained in the first episode of A Real Affliction, in which I talked about my personal experiences with it, BPD can make people want to die, but it is also highly treatable through evidence-based methods like dialectical behavior therapy, DBT, and schema therapy. Accessing that therapy can be a challenge, however. In British Columbia, where I live now, visits to psychiatrists are covered by the Provincial Medical Services Plan, but due to a severe doctor shortage, no psychiatrist on Vancouver Island, population 864,000, is currently taking new patients. Most non-psychiatry visits related to mental health are paid for in BC by the client, who may or may not have extended medical insurance through an employer. So when I found myself in need of mental health treatment last year, it took a while to find a therapist whom I could afford and who I wanted to work with. In that interval, I was so grateful to be able to turn to the BPD Society of BC for online peer support groups. No matter where they live, BPD patients often need what I'll call interstitial support. Dialectical behavior therapy, the most common treatment for it, can take a while to work. It involves reprogramming established thought and behavioral patterns, which doesn't happen overnight. In that vulnerable interval, when we're reaching our arms out for healing, we need someone to clasp both hands. Nonprofits like the BPD Society of BC fulfill that role, and others. The BPD Society of BC offers in-person and online peer support groups, online DBT courses, advice for those wanting to set up in-person peer support groups in their area, and so much more. When I talked with Bailey, I was blown away by what she and her team have accomplished in the past dozen years. What a hopeful thing to realize that a group of determined people can dramatically expand access to treatment and other resources for people with BPD. Particularly in physician-strapped BC, their efforts are needed, yet they have also sent out tendrils of support around the world, with people from India and Iran attending their online peer support group. In the interview that follows, Bailey gives me exciting news about how the Society's BPD Awareness Days are fighting stigma and how preventive DBT programs are being implemented in U.S. high schools, something she hopes to see in Canada too. I am inspired by her commitment to expanding treatment options in remote areas of BC and her desire for a program at the University of Victoria, where I teach, that could train student counselors to use DBT. In addition to her work with the Society, Bailey has lived experience with the disorder, a master's degree in social work, and a private practice. Please come back in about 2 weeks for the first part of an interview with therapist Jessie Shepherd, author of Millie the Cat Has Borderline Personality Disorder. Now, Bailey will tell us about what the BPD Society of BC offers.
So, Bailey, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Let's start with the impetus for founding the BPD Society of BC. What prompted you to set it up? What made you feel that there was a need for it?
Yeah, okay. So I co-founded the BPD Society in 2012. And prior to that, we had started a small support group in Victoria, peer support group. And we noticed that there wasn't a lot of services for people with BPD, and there was just a huge gap. There was a lot of stigma. And so me and the co-founder got together and we decided, why don't we start a nonprofit and see if we can expand our services? And then we created a board with other like-minded people, my mom being one of them. And so that's kind of how it started.
How much has it grown since then? How many people are involved with running it, or whatever numbers you have, either in terms of the people involved in running it or how many people make use of it?
Yeah, sure. So we have right now currently a support group in Victoria, Vancouver, New West, and Nanaimo, and also more recently our virtual group. And that's expanded to anyone in the world able to attend. And generally, if we were to combine those numbers, get around 1,600 participant seats in a year. And then other than that, we also offer educational presentations to bring awareness and break the stigma for BPD. And one of the things that we do specifically for that is we have BPD Awareness Day. And that's a full day, about 6-7 hour event where we bring folks together that are living with BPD and also professionals in the field that get to talk about what BPD is, what it's not, myths and facts. And even more recently to that, we've also started our affordable virtual DBT or dialectical behavioral therapy or skills group. So we run that twice a year. And that has so far shown a lot of success. And so we hope to continue doing that, including to adolescents. That's one of the hopes.
I can imagine there's increasing need for that with all the mental health effect that we're seeing from COVID and everything else. Are there any other societies like this in Canada, or are you alone with the BPD Society of BC?
So we're the only nonprofit in British Columbia that offers direct services for people living with BPD. There are other organizations that do support folks with BPD, but that's not necessarily their mandate. Then there's also two other nonprofits that are specifically to support family members or loved ones in outside of British Columbia.
I imagine, well, and actually I know this, I did attend a couple of the online support group. It's definitely not just people in BC who are attending.
Yeah, definitely. We have people throughout Canada, United States, Europe. We've had people from Iraq, India. There's lots of different folks that participate in the group, and it really shows the need for the service, as there isn't a lot of services that are similar throughout the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I know from living in different countries, there are some countries where mental health services, mental health acceptance is further along than others. So that's one nice thing I imagine with having these online groups that can be attended by people from all over the world. When did you start the online component in terms of the support group?
So we started in 2020 during COVID. And so we had to shut down our in-person groups. And then we thought that was actually our biggest group. And so we wanted to support people worldwide, but also specifically more so rural and remote communities in BC, which we also are seeing a huge need for. So we decided to continue doing that. And so now we have the hybrid services. Yeah, so people can attend weekly now. Prior to that, it was bi-weekly, and now we've just shifted it to a different day so that we can support people on a weekly basis.
Do you have any advice for people who might want to try one of the online support groups, but they're feeling kind of nervous, or even just in terms of what to expect? Could you give some information about that?
Yeah, for sure. So we go through the same comfort agreement in every group, whether it's virtual or in person. And then we go into any announcements, if there is any from the society. And then we do a brief check-in, what brought you to the group today? And then the majority of the component is an open discussion period where people can talk about certain topics that are important to them. And it can change from week to week. Sometimes they're similar. And then we have our social time at the end where folks can get together and form friendships or exchange numbers and or discuss any topics that were left over that they wanted to get some more clarity on. For newcomers, yeah, it can be overwhelming at first. If you have a new diagnosis or self-diagnosed or formally, you're welcome to attend the group. So are loved ones, family, friends, partners. We also do have sometimes professionals or students drop by to check out the group. And with the virtual one specifically, you're welcome to put just listening in there so you don't have to feel pressured to share. You're welcome to turn camera off, you know, use an unidentified name. So
having that flexibility is really nice. In the groups I attended, the moderator would ask people what they wanted to talk about that evening. And they can't accommodate everything, but especially if a few people mentioned something, then that became a focus for the night. And that's nice too, just to feel like common concerns are being addressed. And often there are shared concerns among the group. So that's great. I know you also on the website mentioned that people can contact you if they're interested in establishing in-person peer support group. Do you work with people and help guide them through that process?
Yeah. So over the years, we've expanded to different areas, and there's certain kind of target areas or areas of need that we are seeing. A lot of the time, that's rural remote communities, Northern BC, the islands in Vancouver Island. Kelowna is another big one that we're trying to open right now. And so if people are living in those communities and they're interested in starting a support group under the BPD Society, then we will do the training. We will support getting a location and generally just supporting folks ongoing to help them to establish and maintain a support group in those areas.
That's so fantastic. I mean, for anyone who's not living in BC or even in Canada, just to explain that in certain areas of BC, there are extreme limitations on the provincial healthcare system. On Vancouver Island, I know it's extremely hard to get, if not impossible, to get an ongoing psychiatrist right now. Other types of mental health care professionals are more readily accessible, but in remote areas, it's just extremely difficult. So I think it's so good for people to know that they can reach out to you to kind of fill those gaps. But it sounds like even if the mental health care infrastructure from the province were everything to be hoped, there would still definitely be a role for this kind of nonprofit. What do you think it is in particular about BPD that benefits from having a kind of nonprofit approach to making resources available?
Yeah, so specifically like our peer support groups, it's a part of the continuum of care. So for example, people will be referred to us right out of the hospital system and they will be newly diagnosed. And so they want to learn more about what it's like to live with BPD and often here, like I've never been in a room full of this many people living with the same disorder. Right. I didn't know that existed. And so shared experience can be really supportive and collaborative for people gaining more peer relationships, more information and awareness. Sometimes we touch on skills, but it's more focused to the support. Or are able to share, like, these are the skills or the experience that's worked for me. And so we support that journey.
Yeah, there is something really powerful about being in a room with other people who get what you're going through. And I think for me, the way someone else describes something can help you understand what you're going through. And it just gives that validation, which is so important.
I also think, like you mentioned, that validation that's often, you know, lacking, I feel, sometimes in the community. And so people are able to share their experience and feel validating that I'm not alone. You know, often we hear people say, like, I wouldn't be here without the support. And I think that really is the power of peer support and offering to, because, you know, there is long wait lists, there is red tape in the community, there is still stigma. With that peer support group, it can be like a holding space while people are waiting to get into treatment, and that offers more hope.
Yes, while you're on the waiting list for a counselor, or either here or even in the U.S. where I used to live, even when you're lucky enough to have health insurance, private health insurance in the U.S., often you have to wait for a therapist who will take it. The few who accept insurance will have wait lists. And so having those resources in the meantime, or just when you need extra help, when you're going through something, functional recovery of BPD is absolutely possible, but you know, you can still have bumps along the way, and knowing that that's there is really great. I think that's one silver lining about COVID. As a result of COVID, we have more online resources, which, especially when people are in distress, they might feel that that's easier to access, or they might not be in an area that has an in-person support group. You mentioned a little bit the BPD Awareness Day. Can you talk a little about your awareness and advocacy work?
Yeah. So a few things that we do. You had mentioned the BPD Awareness Day. So we've been doing that. I think this will be our sixth annual this year, where we bring people together on a panel, but they do it separately. So there's about 30-minute segments throughout the 7-hour day where people can share their story of lived experience or their experience being a professional. And the focus really is on bringing that awareness around what BPD really is and isn't, those myths and facts, breaking stigma. Also, and that's in May for BPD Awareness Month. And then generally, anyone's welcome to contact us to do a complimentary awareness presentation. So it's an hour presentation with one of our volunteers, and you can choose from having like a kind of a BPD 101, a rundown of what it is, what's not, the statistics and research, and then how to support someone living with BPD. And we do touch on stigma and the voices of BPD. And then there's also the opportunity to have a panel or one or two presenters that talk about their lived experience of having BPD, and or we can combine the two. So we generally do that for other nonprofits, businesses, health authorities. Yeah. So we've been doing that for as long as we've been in existence. And generally, also, we do support people with system navigation. So if there's anyone is curious about a service, or they need to be referred somewhere, or there's a gap there, and we will do best to support people on how to navigate that, because it can be really challenging. And we do have a wealth of resources on our website that do touch on those resources. So we have a section where it talks about the different organizations that support people, like peer-approved counselors, different polls that people can read with different subheadings, ones or for skills, and people can download those PDFs, and different books too that we've recommended, and websites.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the resource section. We do have a list of full-length books, but also a lot of articles and talking about the facts versus the myth. What are some things you wish the general population who haven't been exposed to BPD that much, what do you wish that they understood about borderline personality disorder?
Yeah, so I think a big one that you touched on was the functional recovery piece, that people living with the disorder can and do get better. There's not like necessarily a cure, but there's different levels of functionality and recovery for people with the disorder. So it's not lost cause. I think also what can be important is understanding that there's a lot of labels that are put on people or misconceptions about people living with the disorder. We often hear attention seeking, dramatic, manipulative, even dangerous. And a lot of that's been amplified in the media. And so we want to just dispel those myths by talking about what those maybe behaviors actually mean. So for example, right. Like attention seeking really is help seeking. People are wanting to seek out support. They're looking for resources. They may have been stuck for a long time. And so just even adjusting kind of the way people are viewing the disorders can be really helpful.
Yeah, it's so important.
Also, the stigma starts in education systems because the way that, especially kind of like the old school ways that psychiatrists or other mental health professionals are taught, give the person very minimal time to discuss their needs. And if you see a certain behavior, this is what that means, et cetera. And that it's difficult to treat. And so from the research that we know currently, that there's very successful rates of treatment when people are doing, say, for example, dialectical behavioral therapy. There is also other evidence-based therapies, schema focus, transference focus, mentalization, etc. Some are more common in different areas of the world, but there's a huge body of research that's coming out showing over the past maybe 20 years that there can be improvements with living with BPD. And not only that, same with adolescents. And that's a huge one that I'd like to touch on, is I think that's still a really big stigma that people living with, you know, the symptoms or the traits or even the diagnosis of BPD under the age of 18 is possible. Yeah. And so far, we haven't, you know, seen a lot of people be able to shift that perspective. And there's a lot of good research that's coming out now showing that that's not the case.
Yeah, absolutely. And one way to put it is that BPD was probably deemed difficult to treat because maybe people weren't using the right approaches, things like DBT.
There is some communities, mostly in the States, that have implemented DBT in schools as more of a prevention social emotional learning model. And that's what we would really hope to see brought into Canada. I know that there has been some mindfulness that has already been starting to be integrated and can be taught by anyone. It can be done by administration, teachers, anyone, and the counselor. But the hope is that people are able to learn these coping skills early. And if there is people identified with needing more support, then they would go into the actual treatment, which is DBTA. And again, we don't have a lot of DBTA. None on the island, but there's far and few between in Canada. So again, that's something we're hoping that we can bring in.
Yeah, that's really heartening to hear that some schools are offering it. For anyone who doesn't know a lot about it, I just think it's the kind of thing with where one of its prongs is mindfulness, and mindfulness can help everyone, you know, on this planet.
There's also family connections. That's also, that's based out of the States at NEA BPD. And then Sash Bear brought it in to Canada. And so we've run two of those groups before and hope to do it again in the future. And that's for family members to learn some of the DBT skills themselves. And again, have like a community where they're offering validation to each other and then bringing those principles into their family relationships. And so that is another component that is really important.
It's just such a good thing to keep in mind that that is something, if people are listening to this simply because they know someone with it, that is something you can do. And any kind of work that helps you to deal with conflict, with stress, with interpersonal relationships is something everyone can benefit from. So it's about 12 years old now, the society.
Yes, we've been running the support group a little bit longer than that, but it takes a bit to become a nonprofit. And we're also a charity, registered charity.
Oh, that's great. Over that period of 12, 14 years, how has the perception of BPD changed? And how would you like to see it change further in terms of the perception of it and resources? You've mentioned a few things you definitely hope for in terms of resources. So resources or anything else, how would you like to see it change?
Yeah. So over the years, especially when we're doing more of those awareness presentations with people, we can actually see the shift when people are listening. And so I think that that has been really supportive, is bringing more awareness about what BPD is and what it isn't. And so more of those moments that we see directly is where we're noticing the change. And also there's some more accessibility to DBT. There is tends to be long wait lists and red tape, but it's popping up more throughout communities and becoming more well known as a treatment or the primary treatment for BPD. And so those are some things that we've noticed throughout the years, and just even people being more open to discussing their recovery journey or, you know, a family member that's going through it. And so I think some of the general attitude around mental health is changing. And so people are open to talk about their experiences and are feeling less alone.
Yeah, it always surprises me, and in the best way, when I have university students who will come to me and talk to me, just to be open about the diagnoses they have. Some of them have accommodations, but even if they do, they just want to say, hey, this is what is going on with me. And I just can't imagine that happening 30 years ago when I was in university, or even more so that I would feel comfortable sharing it. Because it was just you didn't talk about those things. Really.
I mean, the attitude and the mm-hmm. has shifted in that aspect.
Yeah, which is such a positive thing. And groups like the BPD Society of BC, you're doing so much incredible work and just helping to support people. Is there something in particular in terms of your impact that you're particularly happy about?
I think the DBT was for us a really huge goal that we accomplished, and I'm super proud of it. We did it started in 2020, so that was a big deal. And just seeing the shift in people and knowing that what we're providing is an evidence-based treatment and it's having an impact on people's lives. We do evaluation for all of our programs, whether that be the peer support or the DBT. And so we're able to see trends in how that shift is happening for people from the beginning or the middle or the end of the program. We've also, I think one thing I didn't mention was that we sometimes engage in research projects also. And one of the things that we did was with 15 researchers, and we looked at the feasibility about bringing peer support into psychiatric hospitals. And so that was also helpful insight to us to know one need that was happening also in the community.
That's amazing. I think that making DBT more available is a huge accomplishment. In case anyone's listening and they want to access any of the resources, are there set times that are likely to remain in terms of the online support group, or should people check the website for times and days?
I don't have them all in front of me. So we have our virtual on Sunday at 4 p.m. and that's weekly. And our Victoria group is our longest running, and I'm also located in Victoria. So I know more about that one, and or have at least memorized the times. And it's Wednesday at 7 p.m. And the other ones are throughout the week, I think Tuesday and Thursdays. The website would be the best place to go to. And
the Wednesday online support group at 7 p.m. Also on the website, which I will include a link to, you can find, you know, all so many resources in terms of recommendations for books, articles about different aspects of BPD, you know, peer research and things that you can trust. If anyone wants to make donations, can they do that through your site, or is there some other mechanism?
Yeah, thank you for asking. You're welcome to make a donation on our website, and that's through Canada Helps. And then also there's the option to e-transfer, and that is to our society email, info@bpdbc.ca. There's other ways, like, you know, PayPal, checks, or credit.
Yeah.
Always different options. So those are kind of like our main ones.
Great. Is there anything that you want to say, any final thoughts or comments about the BPD Society of BC?
I just want to be mindful that I know that in rural and remote communities, they're really struggling. And I do want to for the community to know, like, we really see that and we hear that. And we're working in the background to try and make changes in those communities to bring, for example, bring DBT to rural and remote communities and have an accessible counselor along with the program, because that's one of the biggest needs that we've been seeing over the past couple of years, along with running our DBT program, is specifically rural and remote communities and adolescents. So those are two things that are a target for us. And that's what right now the donations would go towards.
yeah, anyone, if you can help, it's definitely a worthy cause because there does seem to be really increasing need. I can only speak from being a university instructor in Victoria.
Love to see a clinic, DBT clinic at UVic. Yep. Just going to put that out there. Maybe in Vancouver, it's possible here.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, so there, is there a specific event at the University of Victoria?
Oh, sometimes we do, yeah. We do the suicide prevention when they are doing the campus kickoff. So we've participated in that yearly, as we do throughout the year with different awareness booths. Specifically, what I think would be really supportive to see at UVic is to have students that are being trained in DBT have a counseling clinic where they can bring clients in a more affordable way. So it's a win-win. They're learning how to provide DBT. We get more access to DBT therapists in the community being trained. Right. And then there's also a sliding scale or a portable fee for people in the community. So yeah. I think it's a great idea. So just putting it out there. And I'm open to other suggestions. People have them and we haven't thought of them or ways to enhance our likelihood of getting the, you know, the results that we're hoping for. So yeah, to meet our mission.
Yeah, it seems like the website, it feels quite inviting in that way, that if people want to reach out, hopefully they will, yeah, to ask questions. But as you just said, that's another thing people could share. If you feel like, hey, this is what I think we could use in this place, something that is elsewhere but not in your location or something you're not seeing yet, it sounds like you're very open to receiving that kind of
definitely. And if people have ideas on how we can, you know, raise funds, I mean, there's peer-to-peer networking where people can make their own Facebook birthday posts and or another idea that we just haven't thought about.
That's great to get out there too. So thank you so much. I really appreciated speaking to you, Bailey. I think the work you're doing is so important, and thank you for talking about what the BPD Society does.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank Bailey McKnight for her time, and I'd like to thank the entire BPD Society of BC for the work that they do. I also want to apologize for my sound quality in the preceding interview. This was one of the first interviews I did, and let's just say there was quite a learning curve. The sound quality in the next interview will be much better. Tune in on May 15th for that one. It will feature the first part of my interview with Jesse Shepherd, author of Millie the Cat Has Borderline Personality Disorder. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.